Hello, it's your dad again, and I wanted to tell you about day two of our trip. That's Sunday, today. We woke up in the morning and we had breakfast outside. Someone bought some bagels and some cream cheese and oranges and orange juice, and we used that table that we bought to have our meals on, and so we had a very nice breakfast outside. And Kim Vandeveer, who's one of the adults on the trip, showed us all a really neat way to peel an orange with a jackknife that wasn't dangerous to your hand and that would get segments of peel off quickly, so I can show you guys that later. And then we got in the vans and we drove to the Salt River, and we went rafting on the Salt River. It was a lot of fun. First of all, the scenery on the way there was really, really beautiful. Very sort of desert, but with lots and lots of interesting plants and different kinds of plants depending on how high up the mountain we were. But the Salt River itself is in a very deep canyon, extremely deep. And we went to an overlook point where you could stand and look down, and it's really kind of scary. The drop is incredible. So then we got back in the vans and drove to the put-in point for the rafting, and we got our rafting gear on and wetsuits and life jackets and helmets and sunscreen, and we got on the rafts and we learned how to raft and went down the river. And it was really fun, really exciting. It was not as scary exciting as the rafting in Chile, but it was very relaxing. You were on a nice boat going down a nice river, and it was really a way to explore the canyon. And the two sides of the canyon are really different because one of them faces south and one faces north. The south-facing side gets a lot of sunlight, so it looks like a desert with cactus and all kinds of sparse desert plants. The north-facing side is much cooler and it gets snowfall that stays as snowfall and so melts into the soil gradually, and it's much more lush. And looking from one side to the other, you can see what look like two totally different ecosystems within Arizona, and that's really neat. So the rafting trip was great. Now, unfortunately, I don't have any sound from the rafting trip because I didn't want to take the sound gear and the rafts because it was going to get really, really wet. But afterwards, we went upriver a little bit and had lunch at a waterfall, and the Terrascopers got some sound there. One of them described looking at the waterfall, and so here it is.
Apache Falls are amazing. 50 meters wide, not very high, maybe maximum 2 meters high. They come down a gentle step at first, and then they all go over the edge. But the river's forced, there's a lot of water going over. Oh wow, and there's green algae growing on the flat parts where the water's smoother. And mud, glorious mud.
And she also got some very nice sound of water going over the falls, where you can hear the falls kind of in the distance and the trickle of the water nearby. And then, because we didn't have sound of people on the raft, she had an idea. And here's her idea.
Hey, everybody scream and pretend like you're on a raft.
What?
Okay. I think I might have got over the sound limit there.
So you can see we're having a lot of fun. After the raft trip, we drove to Phoenix and checked into a hotel here, and actually in Tempe, which is a really sort of a part of Greater Phoenix. And we relaxed a little bit, and then we went to dinner at the house of Kip and Larky Hodges. Now, Kip Hodges used to teach at MIT, and in fact, he's one of the people who started Terrascope. And he has now moved to Arizona State. And so he's right here in town, and he had us all over to his house, and we had a lovely dinner, and he's got a beautiful, really interesting house with all kinds of interesting things planted in the garden, just beautiful stuff indoors. And he walked around his front yard and told us some stories about the plants in his garden. And one of them is a tree called the Palo Verde, which is unusual because it can, you know, all trees get energy from sunlight, but they get energy through their leaves. Their leaves photosynthesize. This tree has leaves, but the bark can also photosynthesize. And here's Kip telling us about it.
So basically this uses photosynthesis in its most optimal way, because in a really hot summertime when it gets to 110 degrees here, it's a liability to have leaves because you transpire so much. If you're a tree, you lose so much moisture with leaves, so you don't want leaves. In the wintertime, you don't want leaves because it can freeze here. So basically, in the dead of the winter, there are no leaves. In the dead of the summer, there are no leaves. And so there are only leaves in the spring and in the fall. And usually only after it rains. So, but the rest of the time, it does its photosynthesis through its bark.
Later on, Kip started telling us about some of the animals that come down into his yard, because he lives near a nature preserve. In fact, it's called South Mountain, and it's a city nature preserve, and it's the largest, by area, the largest city park anywhere in the U.S., and there's a lot of wild animals there. And so he was talking about owls and snakes and things, and that got him started talking about rattlesnakes. And he started talking about poisonous snakes in general and told us a really interesting story.
There was a guy named Bill Haas who ran something called the Miami Serpentarium. I kid you not. In Florida. And he got the idea, he was the first person to have the idea that you could make antivenin for neurotoxic snakes. And so the way you make antivenom historically, the way you do it historically is that you take the snake venom, inject it into a horse. I know this sounds horrible, right? You inject it into the horse. You make a serum from the blood of the horse. And that's the way they make antivenom.
And the horse
as
would
a
survive.
Derivative of that.
The horses.
No, sometimes the horse would survive, and sometimes they wouldn't. But they would take that and make it. So this guy got the idea that because everybody did this normally for hemotoxic snakes, you could also do it for neurotoxic snakes. But he had to prove it that this would be true, and so he decided to experiment on himself. Plus, he handled the snakes all the time in order to get them, because to milk a rattlesnake or any other kind of snake, you have to catch them, and then you have to have them bite into a little membrane, and you have to massage their poison glands and get them to excrete the poison. So he started doing this. He bought illegally, totally illegal in the U.S., he bought a cobra, an Indian cobra, and he basically had the cobra, and the cobra bit him accidentally. He got very sick, didn't quite die, but he got very sick. They had to put him in an iron lung. You know what an iron lung is? Yeah. A breathing machine. So they had to put him in an iron lung. But then he thought, well, you know, this is too bad, but still I'm alive. And the only thing he knew to make a living with was to go back and do the same thing. So he went back to the same thing, catching cobras to do this sort of stuff. And a second cobra bit him. And the next time a cobra bit him, he was only in the hospital for like 4 or 5 days and then got out. And he realized he must be building up some immunity to the cobra venom. So after 4 or 5 years of that, he started injecting himself with raw venom. And usually cobra venom, because he had more cobras than anything else. But he would inject himself with it, and ultimately got to the point that he was injecting himself with a half a cc a week of cobra venom. And he became so... immune is a bad word, right? But he was able to control it to the point that after a few years, they would actually call him in for blood transfusions for people who had been bitten by neurotoxic snakes, and they would give them blood transfusions to create antibodies to fight the poison. And he actually saved a little girl's life in North Florida who was bitten by a coral snake.
After dinner, Larky told us a really interesting story, kind of a legend story about animals in the water. She used to be a professional storyteller, so she's really good at it, and she told an interesting story. And then she told us a lot of things about the way people are trying to adapt to use water more wisely and more sustainably here. And I can't seem to find the sound from that, so maybe if I find it, I'll put it in tomorrow's postcard. But it was a lovely evening, and the students all had a good time, and we all had a good time, and we headed home. And then a couple of the students did a little presentation about the past couple of days, and they did it mostly, it was like a slideshow with music in the background, and it was really nice and really fun. And now it's time for bed. Good night.